every year, the National Flute Association, which is the kind of the trade association, you could say, that under the umbrella of which all of flutedom, if you want to call it that, in the United States clusters, every year at their annual convention, they award a couple of distinguished achievement awards and also a distinguished service award. In fact, my former teacher, Betty Bang Mather, received the Distinguished Achievement Award in 2012 at their convention in Las Vegas. And a lot of very distinguished colleagues in preceding years have been granted this award. So for me, it's a very nice kind of recognition and a very satisfying thing to have the recognition of your peers, of my fellow flutists. The convention will be in Washington, D.C. in the middle of August. And aside from receiving the award, I'm going to be very active there performing some of the music that concerns me these days and also being honored with a concert of my music that will be performed by a group of people that consists of old friends and colleagues, some of whom I've known for 35 or 40 years, plus ex-students of mine who I taught in New York and California and other places. So it will be, I think, a wonderful survey of, you know, the stuff I've done across the course of my life.
So this performance, it's going to be a world premiere of a major flute quartet. So this is something you have written?
Yes. In 1962, while I was still a student at Columbia, I wrote a quartet for four flutes, and I called it the Grand Quartet. Now, why Grand Quartet? Well, because 100 years earlier, a flutist in Germany, Friedrich Kuhlau, had written one of the few existing quartets up to that date, and he called his the Grand Quartet. So I thought, in honor, sort of tipping my hat to Kuhlau, whose music I have enjoyed playing, you know, he's a wonderful composer for the flute, I would, in tribute, call my piece the Grand Quartet. Okay, so 53 years have passed since I wrote that piece, and it's been one of the pieces of mine that's been most performed. It's been performed very often in a lot of different places. Recently, I've made the acquaintance of a wonderful flute quartet based in the Northwest. They're based in Idaho, Washington, and Oregon, and they're called the IWO Quartet, I-W-O, for the initial letters of their various, of their respective states. And they played my Grand Quartet, and they said, write us a sequel, write us a Son of Grand Quartet. So I did that. Actually, at the beginning of this year, the first 5 months of the year, January to May, I was scrambling to write that piece. And at first I thought, well, I'll just call it Son of Grand Quartet. But then I decided not to. And finally, the title is Second Grand Quartet for 16 Flutes. That's kind of a provocative title. How can a quartet use 16 flutes? But the fact is that the members of the IWO Quartet stipulated in the commission that they wanted me to write it in such a way that each of them could play all four of their flutes, that they could play piccolo, flute, alto flute, and bass flute. So there are four people playing the piece, but between them, they're employing 16 different instruments. And for me, you know, as musicians deal with time, time is the medium through which our work unfolds. And I begin the new second grand quartet with the last few notes of the first grand quartet. And it's my way of tying together 1962 and 2015 as if hardly any time had elapsed. Because that's how it seems, you know? Really, 50 years? It doesn't feel that long. And yet, by the calendar, yep, all those years. So, in a way, with the new, the second grand quartet, I'm sort of tying things together and also expressing the fact that maybe the music that I wrote way back when I was in my early 20s, can have something to do with the music that I'm writing now when I'm in my approaching late 70s. Musicians, you know, we always struggle with and wrestle with time. And this is maybe one way, by the connection between these quartets, that I'm not exactly defeating time, but maybe temporarily outwitting it. a little tiny bit.
And then also you're going to be doing something with a master class or something where you're going to have and be teaching a lot of different techniques, flute techniques?
That's correct. Actually, this is a class that is based on three compositions of mine that were written at different times in my life, an early one and, for lack of a better term, I'll say a middle period one, a more recent piece. And these are being worked on by university students. And basically what it will be kind of an open lesson. I will listen to them play and make suggestions that I hope will help them move forward more quickly and efficiently. So that's a throwback to my teaching days when I did that sort of thing very often.
And you're also going to be doing a silent film suite. And I'm guessing this is the project you worked on with the Red Cedar Chamber.
This is the Iowa connection with Red Cedar Chamber Music and Michael Zoss, who is from Washington, Iowa, who uncovered this treasure trove of early film from the late 19th century and the early 20th century. Red Cedar worked with Michael in terms of adding music to the films, and they in turn commissioned me to write music for four of the films. So that will be played also at the NFA convention. They are wonderful musicians, and we have quite a long association going back to the early 2000s. The nice thing about Red Cedar is that when they commission a composer, they don't just play his or her piece once and then put it on the shelf. Oh, nice first performance. No, in the case of this Brinton film project that they did with the silent films, I think this spring they performed that music and my piece 56 times. Now, that's music to the ears of a composer. You write a piece, and right off the bat, the first ensemble that plays it, they play it 50 some times. That is nice mileage, I think, for getting a piece out into the world.